Chema. So the line, of course, is from Savitri, Book 1, Canto 2. She bore the touch of that which kills and saves. So I slightly modified it to slays, kills and saves. So as we all know that the power of destruction is inbuilt in creation, and like all the powers, it has its divine origin. And in our own life, we cannot imagine taking a step forward in whatever way we want to conceive of it without a number of elements being destroyed. Even putting your step on the soil implies that, you know, there are things which are being destroyed. So there is the power of destruction, and Indian thought has very beautifully and wonderfully, because behind everything there is the divine. So it has also given it, it has seen it as not only the divine being, but also the most powerful. When we look at Sri Aurobindo invoking all the forces, all the beings, be wide in me, O Varuna, and he goes on in this prayer. And at the end of it, he invokes Kali. So that's a very powerful prayer of Sri Aurobindo, which we can probably, you know, read and start if I find it. But it's the prayer where there is an invocation of all the gods. And then Sri Aurobindo says that, let me not be subject to these gods, O Kali. So this Kali is originally the power that changes time. So Kala comes from Kali, and it's the Zeitgeist. It's the power that can suddenly comes and changes time. And if you look at a century or a century and a half back, we can see that this power had been working very powerfully. And that's why we see the age of revolutions, which we are just leaving behind, because it was needed for time to take a leap. In Indian thought, it is also described as Balaram, who comes first and clears the ground for Krishna's dance. So this is the power which has been active in this world since almost 150 years. But mostly we'll see that since the beginning of the previous century, and Sri Aurobindo invoking Kali. Very few people see his association with Kali, but actually, as the century started, he wrote Bhavani Bharati, which is an invocation to Kali. And then subsequently he, in his Bangla writings, and subsequently his own union with Krishna and Kali, which showed the way. And very cryptically, in Essays on the Gita, which is post-1914, Shubhda speaks about the disastrous results that can follow this. And he writes very interestingly that all of us who have used this force with open eyes know the effect it can have. My own feeling is that Sri Aurobindo is describing his own use of the Kali force, which came in, and in Durga Stroth also we see, which did push the British back, but its repercussions have been tremendous. And therefore the mother subsequently would not favor the use of Kali, because Kali's method is she takes leap. So we have this in the Indian thought also, that when Kali begins to act, then after a while she does not care, you know, the good side and the bad side. Anything which carries any imperfection takes her wrath. During the 65 attack on the ashram, I remember how the mother would say that for a long time all these young people wanted to go out and defend the ashram, but she held them back. And she told them after 8 hours that, okay, you can go. And we know Togada was one of them who went out, and he faced plenty of people, just barehanded means with a lathi, people with stones and everything. And I met him. He said, I felt that Durga is working through me. And he fell unconscious, ultimately survived. And mother said that, I didn't send all of you earlier because it was Kali who was acting. And if any of you went with any imperfection inside you, she does not respect boundaries. She doesn't respect, all kinds of apparent goodnesses, because she can see through all the masks. So in general, mother does not prefer the method of Kali, and that's why she would say that, well, this time hopefully, not hopefully, she has assured us that there would not be a pralaya, because every time the reason for pralaya is basically Kali takes over, and she takes over because the world is not ready. Now, is the world ready now? No. We know that several times when mother is asked about, is the world ready? She would say the world is not ready. Now, very interestingly, this Kali force which had started acting during the First World War, she describes that. And there are two kinds of action in this force. One is that those who are slain, who need to be slain, but those who become instruments of Kali in that battle, and even if they are dying or they receive blows and injuries, they are taken, they take a leap. The mother describes this when she sees the soldiers who are returning from First World War. There is something very similar which is described in the Mahabharata also, that those who die for a cause which is truly noble and good, who do it to save the world, and they get killed in the process, but they take a leap. So there is the action of Kali which has been going on, and it was one of the reasons why the atom bomb was discovered. It may sound very strange, but Shurvindo spoke about it, and the Divine Mother spoke about it. She spoke about the atom bomb as a marvelous discovery, but she also had a word of caution about it, that now this energy should be used for constructive purposes. So man was not ready, but he was given this power because of the contingency. So as we know, that time the Pearl Harbor took place, and of course there was already quite a bit of time which had gone into the discovery of the atomic bomb. But she saw the atomic bomb as a sign of man's growing mastery over these aspects of physical nature. In fact, she saw in the splitting of the atom the release of vital forces. And they are very powerful vital forces. We can imagine the physical forces of tornado and earthquakes behind which Kali is there. But this was splitting of the atom, where the vital energy has gone into becoming these atomic particles. And suddenly that is released. That is a tremendous power. And that has a great potential. But what is interesting is, which I thought that I will read for a while, is what the mother had discovered. I had heard this story that Pavitrada had discovered something very fascinating. He had discovered, we know he was a physicist, he had discovered how to have the nuclear bomb reaction on the tip of an arrowhead. Now it may sound like sci-fi, and we all have heard about this in Mahabharata, about, you know, Brahmastra, and we know that how the atom bomb, when the person who made it, Oppenheimer, when he saw and heard about it, he realized that as if a thousand suns, he remembered the phrase of the Gita, as time the destroyer. So here the mother has written this part of the play. This is based on a truth which did take place between her and Pavitrada. Now very few people are aware of it, that Pavitrada had discovered the secret of the nuclear fusion and nuclear reaction by simply loading the tip of an arrow, that much. And any like copper could trigger it, iron could trigger it. And so the mother says this through the scientist. All of you know the story of the atom bomb. It's there in Collected Works of the Mother, volume 12. It's very an interesting piece of information, not just information, but why I'm sharing it, I'll say in a moment. But many people are not aware of this. You know that it has been succeeded by an infinitely more destructive weapon, the hydrogen bomb. You also know as well as I do that humanity is staggering under the impact of these discoveries, which have placed in its hands an unequal power of destruction. But if I now revealed my new discovery, this was never revealed to the world, and hopefully it will never be revealed. Because when Pavitrada spoke to the mother about it, mother said, you know it, I know it, and that's the end of it. But what is this discovery? She says, if I unveil my secret, I would place a diabolical power in the hands of just anybody. And without any control or restriction, we can almost see that prophecy is coming true. Uranium and thorium were easily monopolized by the governments first on account of their relative scarcity, but mostly because of the difficulty of activating them in atomic piles. Now, again, very interestingly, that the governments have been trying to activate, find a easier way, a cheaper way of activating it. And I think some of us may be aware that India has just recently made a breakthrough of actually activating through the use of thorium, a very cheap source of energy without, in fact, it will be self-generating. This is very recent news. But you can well imagine what would happen if any criminal or crank or fanatic could in any makeshift laboratory put together a weapon capable of blowing up Paris, London or New York. Looks like Mother is speaking yesterday about all that is happening today in the Straits of Hormuz. Would that not be the finishing blow for humanity? I to have reeled under the weight of my discovery. This is the scientist speaking in The Great Secret, which is a play. I hesitated a long time and have not yet been able to come to any decision. Thus, the very first postulate with which I set out was to, discover the nature's secrets. And then she says that scientific progress does not necessarily imply moral progress. Scientific and intellectual knowledge is powerless to change human nature, and yet that has become the pressing need. If human greed and passion remained what they are today, almost the same as they were in the Stone Age, the whole language, everything is as if, the protagonist is speaking something which we hear today, then humanity is doomed. We have reached a point where unless there is a rapid and radical moral change, mankind will destroy itself with the power it has in its own hands. So they foresaw all this. They foresaw the tremendous power. This is the power which Kali uses. This is the power that Shiva uses when he destroys the world. And in Shobindo's essays on Superman, he says that, well, this power very often, because it goes in the hands of the Titan, but the Titan does it unconsciously. But if it is in the hands of Shiva, he does it consciously with love and wisdom. So this is the power which is working towards changing the world rapidly. So if we look at the logic behind all this is and why this is happening, while on the surface we will talk about, international dealings, we all want peace, apparently. I don't know how many people want peace. Very often the peacemakers in the world, I just ask them, do you have peace at your own home? Because to make peace between two human beings living together is so difficult. But people speak about peace. But a premature peace is going to be as much disastrous, because people go in their comfort zone. That's why the mother Sri Aurobindo says that in Essays on the Gita, no real peace can be till the heart of man deserves peace. And she speaks about the debt to Rudra which has to be paid. So before, the law of Vishnu can prevail. So the law of Vishnu is, he is the preserver with Mother Lakshmi. He arranges everything harmoniously. But are we really ready for it? So we see that this power of Kali, which is being unleashed over the last maybe 40, 50 years, its maximum intensity is, of course, when Sri Aurobindo and the mother bore the brunt. But we can see once again that after apparent, I won't use the word lull, but seemingly less intensity, but again the intensity has started since 2014 with the 100 years of Mother's coming. So this is intensity because Kali is growing impatient. That's precisely what Mother kept reminding in her conversations, that Kali has come and she wants to participate, and she had to hold her back every time. Because if she acts, she knows she is impelled by the spirit of time. She is the spirit of time. At one place, Sri Aurobindo speaks of her as the Zeitgeist. And he gives several examples in history, one of them being Napoleon. So when Kali acts, there is no good and bad. It doesn't act based on our little notions that this is right and this is wrong. She has her own vision. And wherever all that she sees is that what is the direction truth must take. Let's take one example which is happening today. Well, should there be a place for democracy or should there be a place for dictatorship? Now, a democrat may not be a good man and a dictator may be a nice king. But the age of dictatorship is gone. And when Kali acts, she doesn't care who is, a good human being and what destruction is going to take place as she Shobindu describes in Savitri, I care not for, I reason not of virtue and of sin, but do the deed God has put in my heart. So this action we can see more and more intensifying recently, and we are likely to see, because man is not responding. So what is the way? Of course, Divine Mother says, I have been holding back Kali. She describes it several times, and I have been trying to hold her back, because if she goes out, all out, there will be massive destruction. And though she has also foreseen it. So what is the way that we can, now, when we understand the principle behind the action of Kali, she slays to save. There are very interesting examples in Mahabharata. One of them I remember that, you know, when Arjun is hesitating to kill Karn, he says, he is unarmed, he is on the, his wheel is stuck in the mud and he is trying to take it out. He has forgotten his mantra to invoke the Brahmastra. How can I kill him? And that is the time Sri Krishna says, you are not killing him, you are liberating him. So he advises him to use the Anjali Astra, a Divyastra. The only time Divyastra is used ever in the Mahabharata, despite Arjun having all of them with him, is during the killing of Karna. And he says that you are not killing him, you are freeing him. He is himself feeling crushed under the weight of participating on the side of what is openly evil. So when Kali acts and she kills, she saves through that process, because otherwise mankind individually and collectively would be engaged on far more sinister deeds. So she stays the hand of evil, and in that also there is a great compassion. And that's why in Savitri, where this lines comes, that you know, she when she acts, then nothing really can come in her way, because then you can't say I am a good guy and I am a bad, and so is a bad guy. The good and bad are all taken care of together, because there is always that lurking little evil. So many stories are there about it. When Kali goes on a destructive rampage, then only either Shiva can stop her by lying on a breast. There's a very interesting story. We know the story of Kali, the power of time, which is moving everything, and Shiva stays on his breast, takes place the cosmic dance of Kali. Then in another story, when Kali goes on a rampage because the Asuras have misbehaved, then she is not only after the Asuras, she is also after the gods. And the gods are feeling threatened. And they wonder why. And the logic is very simple. You people were sleeping when all this was happening. She doesn't spare the gods also. And when she goes, then the gods go to Shiva. They say, please spare us, do something about her. And Shiva says, I have tried something earlier. I don't know whether I can stop her now or not. And then Shiva becomes a little baby. So where does she stop? This baby comes and this baby cries. And suddenly out of Kali, the compassion comes out. And this compassion begins to stop. We will see this. Even in wars, we will see this. Even nowadays, we see that what is the power which is suddenly raising a different state in humanity is when children suffer. So, because she is full of that compassion, that suddenly that part comes out. But originally, it is a power which slays to save. Save mankind, save individuals, but very few can bear it. Amrita was one of the very fortunate recipients who would receive all kinds of scoldings from the Divine Mother. And one of the stories goes very well, that you know, when Mother scolds him, Amrita is smiling. So Mother scolds him even more, and then Amrita still smiles. And then when Mother goes away, all of them ask him that, you were smiling when Mother was scolding you. He says, yes, because she thinks that I am capable of receiving her anger. Nobody could, and people didn't understand, because human beings think that, you know, so-called that saintly yogi, they must never raise their voice. Well, Shurvindo has been like that. He is like Brahman, absolutely. But Mother has many moods. All these different moods are there in her. And when she would, we remember that even with Amalkiran once, where he was very casually, I think his feet was placed on the bumper, rear side bumper of mother's car, one of the feet, and suddenly mother came and gave him a slap, and he's the proud recipient, and he asked what happened. He said, you are on a battlefield and you are unconscious, you don't know what you are doing. So this is how there is an intense love behind it. One very interesting story, two of them I remember. One of them is recounted by Preeti Das Gupta, and she would often fall ill. So she would go and complain to the mother, and mother would keep quiet. Then I'm just saying that how action of the divine can take place. So one day she went and said, mother, I again had fever, so I couldn't come. And she had fever. And mother gave her a scolding. What is it that you are getting fever every time? And she was very frightened that mother is scolding me. I have fever. She is supposed to show kindness. But the beauty is, she says, for decades her fever went away. Another instance I know is of Chote Narayan ji, who used to experience every night when he came in Golkund, he would experience lot of Rakshasas and Asuras come near trying to drink his blood, and he would go and tell mother, and mother would just quietly listen. She won't say anything. Then he developed a big sore on the foot, and it was very painful. So again he would go and tell the mother. Mother would look with little powerful eyes, but she won't say anything. So after a few days he says, mother, I can't bear it. And then she looked at him. First she looked at the toe where the wound was there. And she looked at him. He felt a piercing power go inside, and his whole body was on fire. This, he has narrated me this incident. And his whole body is on fire. He doesn't know now, you know, what to do. And then she told him, if you are so afraid, you cannot take this yoga. So it was like a double whammy, that on one side his body is on fire, and on the other side she says, if you are afraid, you cannot take this yoga. So he was narrating this incident to me, and then he doesn't know now what to do, because he went back and the whole body is on fire, and then he came back again, and he would tell the mother, and then mother told him, after 2 days go back. So he went back from the ashram. He didn't have money, but somehow people came, money was arranged. He says, when I reached Chennai, 50% of my pain was gone, that burning sensation. By the time he reached Kolkata, 75% gone. When he reached his village, completely gone. Then he understood the grace and love that is behind all this. Because this is a tremendous yoga which is, you know, one has undertaken. And if one is not strong, if one is weak, one cannot bear the pressure of the change. And that's what we see happening in the world today. Another was Taradi's Mausi, maternal aunt. So she was again narrating to me that she developed a big, her cheek was swollen and it became red, and she developed fever, lot of pain. And she would not go. Then somebody said, why don't you go to the mother? Then she was saying, why has the mother given me all this? Very, you know, closed, like resisting. Then she went to the mother when people pushed her, that you go. So the mother, she was telling me this story. She says, I went to the mother thinking that, you know, she'll be very kind. Say, oh, my child, you have this and I'll do. But she gave her a nice slap. So already there is painful lump, and she got a slap. Now, you know, she says, by the time I came down, everything was gone. My whole consciousness was lifted away. Not only this went away, but as if something had totally gone away. So, Mahakali is that, that's why Shubhendu says, on outwardly, if we look at it, it's the power of destruction. But inwardly, when we look at it, she's the power of love, intense love, flaming intensities of love. And this love sometimes saves by simply taking away all that we cherish, we hold on to, we long for. It's a very rare thing for this to act, but it acts like that. There is a nice poem of Tagore which I am reminded, where he says, Jake tumi bohite chaho apar premer bhar. I'll say in Bangla, my broken Bangla. If some Bengali listener is there, please forgive me. And but it has a flavor. Jake tumi bohite chaho apar premer bhar. Eke bari sobe tumi ghochaye dao tar. Na thake tar man apaman, na thake tar dhan. Okay, tumi karo ekla akinchan. So he basically says that somebody whom you love with great intensity, you suddenly tear away all his clothing, all that is defending the person, all that is protecting him, and he is akinchan. He has nothing to hold on to. And he is put on the footpath. Nobody is there whom he can say his own, and thereby you prepare him to bear the burden of your universal love. So this is known, well known. It's this mystic truth. People have not used the word Kali, but we know Bhule Shah, how he writes that, you know, you have made me dance under your sword, and you know, I have been dancing karke thaiya thaiya, and with each drop of my blood your name emerges. This is a story she has narrated with regard to Kali on that flower of divine love. She speaks about how somebody who was trying to escape, who was being chased by a group of people, and then she speaks about in the Arabian desert. And then, you know, the people who were catching on to him, her, actually she doesn't say him or her that time. And how the person is killed, and with each drop of the blood that goes into the soil, there is ultimately this tree emerges, the tree of divine love or divine sacrifice. And out of which we have flowers of divine love, the pomegranate tree. And then somebody said, it was not a he. When I had read, first you think it is about, in Arabia you hear about the prophet, but it's about a she. We don't know, not documented history. So the divine Kali basically asked for what? She asked for sacrifice. That's what we see with Sri Aurobindo writings during the early period of independence. He says that, well, what is the Divine Mother asking from us? She is asking sacrifice. And then we understand that deep behind, what is that love which is operating? So as long as we remain selfish, closed within our little boundaries, mostly Kali won't act, because first Maheshwari comes. So the sequence is very interesting. So first Maheshwari will come and she will lay down the large lines. We see this in Satyug, Maheshwari's action, and she is preparing the large lines through which humanity has to, you know, prepare itself. All the great truths will come. And then comes the age when we see Mahakali, the great battles where, you know, there is the destruction, much that has to go away. People speak of Mahabharata war, but if you really look at that age of Rama, it is something amazing, the kind of things, forces that were unleashed. And in Dwapar, there are decent people. Even the Asura is wearing a human face. And then after that comes, when the path has been clear, then comes Mahalakshmi, who, you know, the flowers of love begin to bloom. And then Mahasaraswati, who builds perfection. So even in our own life of a sadhak, we can see that initially knowledge comes in as a base. We by and large are aware that, you know, we have to move along these lines. This is the path we have to take. And we are very happy that we have learned about the path. Now we have to only walk the path. And sometimes people ask, what is it that I should carry when I take the journey? So I say, carry courage and love. Don't carry anything else. It's likely to be snatched away. What? Because Mahakali is waiting down the line. So Maheshwari sets the, initiates the process. There is knowledge, there is by and large, one is very happy. Oh, yoga of transformation, so wonderful. Then as you begin to move, that's the time when Kali begins to act. If there is sincerity, one thing is there, that if there is no sincerity, Kali doesn't act. There has to be some sincerity. That's what Mother always says, that sincerity means you really want what you're wanting. Otherwise, she will not enter, because it can completely upset life. But when she begins to act, when there is some sincerity in aspiration, then Mahakali comes to root out the major issues, major difficulties, big challenges. And after that phase is over, then we enter into that zone where Mahalakshmi was waiting. She has to soothe our wounds, a more human love, a more, you know, dealing with each other, full of harmony, full of beauty. And then in all the details of life, Mahasaraswati begins to manifest. And everywhere we see, ultimately, if you look at all the four powers, you will see the manifestation of love, nothing else. So Maheshwari's love is compassion, right from height she is seeing. Her love is the kind of love which tells a person, you see, you should walk this way. And if you don't walk that way, you get hurt, you are injured, obviously, or you she watches over you and she says, okay, I'll still be there with you, but from above. So hers is the divine compassion, which is one form of love. Kali's love is intense love. She breaks down in few moments the major obstacles that assail the seeker. And after she has done the work, it's a very, almost all the many sadhaks, at least I know, have gone through this phase. Because a lot of people, when I spoke to them, have had, I'm sure everybody has been in contact with. So they all go through this phase when there is a lot of things which are destroyed and taken away. And people find it little unnerving, disconcerting. But if you go through that phase with faith, then starts, then the rest of the process is a question of working out of details. The lotus of love blooms into the heart, and then one carries on the journey forward. So this is the power which really makes us leap, jump time, literally. That's why she is Kali, Kala. So she is the leader, and when she crosses over a chasm, destroying the obstacles on the way, then all other the gods will follow her. So just some of the passages I thought I'll read. And and her action, how it works, and what is happening today. So she says this after the great war, and this is of course Aurobindo, he has predicted all this. A war has ended, a world has perished in the realm of thought. Things perish in the realm of thought, then they perish outside, and begun to disappear in the order of outward nature. The war that has ended was fought in physical trenches, with shell and shot, with machine gun and tank and aeroplane, with mangling of limbs and crash of physical edifices and rude uptearing of the bosom of our Mother Earth. The new war, or the old continued in another form that is already beginning, will be fought more with mental trenches and bomb-proof shelters, with reconnaissance and batteries and moving machines of thought and word, propaganda and parties and programs, with mangling of the desired souls of men and of nations, crash of many kinds of thrones and high-built institutions, and strong uptearing of the old earth of custom, which man has formed as a layer over the restless, molten forces of evolutionary nature. So now, because these evolutionary forces are very active, any clinging to the past, any clinging to the old. That's why when Mother was asked, what is the way forward? She said only two things you must remember. Do not cling. And the second she said is have the thirst. And then she said, if you do not cling, even the extravagances of an American youth are a path. Because when you cling to the old, this is going to be taken away. So she says the old world that is shaken outwardly in its basis. That's what she called as the hour of God, when the old bases are shaken. So many times we see that people cannot understand. So many people complain, where is the new world? So I ask them, where are you looking for it? So they are saying, our children are no more obedient. So I say, that's the new world. Only you are looking the wrong way. Why should they be obedient to you? Are you God? Are you deserving that obedience? So this is how things are. And already crumbling in some of its past parts is the economic and materialistic civilization. So next war, he has predicted, will be over money and economics, which is what we see happening, which mankind has been forming for the last few centuries from once new materials, now growing rapidly effete, pieced out with broken remnants of antiquity and the Middle Ages. The period of military conflict just at an end came to breach that which thought had already been sapping. An era of revolutions has opened, which is likely to complete the ruin and prepare the building of a new structure. So basically, this new war, which he has foreseen, is going to be a war over money forces. And we see that very interestingly. Normally after wars are over, then people will come, negotiators. Now we will see bankers coming to negotiate, because money is going to be the reason why wars will be fought today. And when that is also over, because this will also meet the same end. Ultimately, wealth which is being misused will either be lost or destroyed, because this is the, we can see Shrivindra's force in this. This is the fiat of the divine. And as it goes, slowly we'll see a new world emerging. So everything that is happening today, that's why when Mother was asked about the Third World War, she said the supreme power and wisdom are looking into it. So there will be wars, but the reason will change completely. So it will be not over land, but over resources, over money. And once that is over, then we will see a clearing of the earth and a new creation which is going to surge up. So while it is happening in the world, as individuals, can we do something? Because this has been a question which everybody asks. People are watching over television, people are watching, you know, various conflicts. So what we can do? So Sri Aurobindo has given this answer way back in The Life Divine, when he says that, you know, technological progress has taken man to a point that it will create a crisis. And in this crisis, these forces are going to become very active, because now the evolutionary energies are working. So the only thing that we can do, we must do with urgency and emergency, is the upward endeavor. And when all this was happening, I was reminded also of, you know, the story of Moses, when the slaves escape and they escape through the sea. That image is still very very clear in my mind, that as he is taking them through the sea parts, and as he is going, the forces of Ramses are chasing, and as they are chasing, the sea begins to close upon them and they are destroyed while these people escape. So there is the sea, there is the, she has spoken about the great flood which Mother has seen, where the great flood is pursuing. And so what will happen? She has said, men, countries, continents, the choice is imperative, truth or the abyss. So she spoke of two things as the main security. One is truth and the other is faith. So about truth, she said, truth in speech, truth in thought, truth in feelings, truth in action. So wherever truth is missing, there will be abyss. And what is abyss? She says, the abyss is fear, the abyss is ingratitude, the abyss is lust for power, greed for money. These are the abysses. So wherever there is lust for power, greed for money, and there is fear, that the abyss will open. And then the disciple asked, what about what is our role? She spoke about faith. So there is a whole group of humanity which must move towards new creation with an urgency. And we remember that one of the reasons why she created Auroville was this. She says, to avert the war. So she spoke of it as the Tower of Babel in reverse. So if humanity can come together and participate in the venture of the new creation, it is going to avert the war, because then now we have begun to build the Tower of Babel in reverse, from above downwards, and not through confusion and, you know, so instead of taking side this way, that way. Because Kali doesn't take sides, she just, when she destroys the Devas and Asuras, wherever there is insincerity, there is destruction. But there has to be a group of humanity which is beginning to press towards the higher and higher layers of consciousness, because this will have an effect on the rest of humanity. So we all have a role to play, and the more we do it, the more we'll bring into effect the energies of a higher order, the powers of a higher order, and the more humanity engages with that, then we will not need to be forcibly, the old world will not need to be forcibly killed. It will get transformed by the power of the divine love acting upon it, as he has spoken of, the same divine love in its great intensity can kill to save, and the same divine love acts like a leaven to form a loaf of bread out of wheat. So this is what, where our role comes in, and there is an urgency now. And those who have turned towards a higher consciousness, she has said this very clearly. She has said that it's an emergency if only man consents to be spiritualized, because if he doesn't, then this is going to increase more and more. And I remember, on which I'll close and then have the questions, I think it was a couple of years back, since you spoke about the Lagras I was just saying that I think the relics should come here very soon. And the sooner it comes, the better it is. Because the world is going to go into a big turmoil. It's not going to end right now. And the more we have people who can put their faith into the constructive forces of the new creation, not the old construction. You go back to the old ways, it will be destroyed again. And in a much worse, much fierce way. So even now we think people are becoming apologists and trying to say, no, let's come together. If you don't destroy things to the roots, so there is only two possibilities, either destruction from the roots or a change from within. And more of us who engage in this, we are very fortunate to be picked up by the Mother for this work. The better it is for the earth, the better it is for the nations, and the better it is for the world. So I'll just close with something which, from the Mother and Sri Aurobindo. All this they have foreseen actually. And they have given the solution everywhere. It's a pity that man does not, how he describes all that fierce form of Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. As we all know, that is basically Kali. Something happened. That is basically Kali who came as Krishna. That story I think many of us know. So now it has come. Just give me one moment and then I'll stop. Some of our beautiful messages. Here we understand that why she works and yes. There it is. Okay, so this is the message she had given, 67, which I was referring to. Men, countries, continents, the choice is imperative, truth or the abyss. So the question was asked that the abyss, so she describes that abyss, what is the abyss? The person asks, the abyss seems to be gaping just in front. Yet there is a confidence that it will be removed from the way. And the mother says the confidence is quite less legitimate. The message is only for those who are still asleep and quite satisfied with their sleep. So the disciple asked, what is the meaning of abyss in your New Year's message? Or put another way, what should a sadhak fear? So the mother says, again looks like she is speaking of yesterday. Right now there is a great tension. They have all taken positions as if to start war. War has begun. It is the blind passion that men put into their international relations. At the base of all there is fear, general distrust, and what they believe to be their interest. And then she qualifies the interest, money, business. It's 1467. A combination of these three things. When these three lowest passions of humanity are brought into play, that is what I call the abyss. When someone has decided to consecrate his life to the seeking for the divine, if he is sincere, that is to say, if the resolution is sincere and carried out sincerely, there is absolutely nothing to fear. Because all that happens or will happen to him will lead him by the shortest way to this realization. That is the response of the grace. People believe that the grace means making everything smooth for all your life. It is not true. The grace works for the realization of your aspiration. And everything is arranged to gain the most prompt, the quickest realization. So there is nothing to fear. So basically the action of Kali is a kind of intense grace. Things which we cannot get rid of. The Divine Mother comes and picks it up and throws it away. Yeah, we will cry for some time, but then we are born free. Fear comes with insincerity. If you want a comfortable life, agreeable circumstances, etc., you are putting conditions and restrictions and then you can fear. But it has no real business in sadhana. So for everyone, she has a word to say, and she has cautioned us 50 years back the mother and Sri Aurobindo have foreseen all this. She has been holding the forces of Kali. She doesn't want it this time. But she has also cautioned abundantly. She has shown us the way individually and collectively, and especially for all those of us who have turned to Mother and Sri Aurobindo, we can help the world simply by moving faster with greater sincerity. By faster is meant putting in greater sincerity towards the path of the supramental transformation, by growing more sincere. And the more humanity ascends a little above, it is enough to create a force field below which will start pulling. It's like a vacuum effect, upward and upward, and these forces which are, that's how she has seen the great flood. The forces which are trying to create more and more danger will automatically get abated. So, namaste, Jai Ma. If there are questions, we can take them up.
So it's a very important reminder that we understand the processes, and your comparison with Kala and Kali, that intensification of time is actually speeding up the process. Speeding up is always painful, yes, because we will have to quickly decide things and not just drag them on into the future. That's why Mother always says, look into the future, think of the future, forget everything else. And that is that speeding up of Marka, which is very graceful for us. For the souls, of course, graceful. Not for those elements in us which want to indulge and continue on their egoistic basis. So it is only for those sadhaks. For the rest, as you rightly quoted, that people who want peace and prosperity and comforts. By the way, Sri Aurobindo warns the same way about Western barbarism. If in the West people will agree only to subscribe to their comforts, and that would be their purpose of life, then it will fall back. The whole thing will stop progressing. If we are not progressing, we are regressing. There is no stage where everything is kept, on one level of harmony or something, what people...
Yes, and in this time, this is very true. If you are not progressing, you regress. This is especially true when we are going through this leap of time. When there are periods when there is neither much progress nor much regression. But now we are in an age when there is a leap... That's where the Kali's action comes in. So we can either progress or we can regress. Very little, we can't remain static. That's true.
And that's what Mother spoke about, reveal what is to be ever young,
Yes, that yes.
It means never to be satisfied with what you achieved. Always move forward. That is the energy which Kali...
Also, since you mentioned Auroville, I must add a little bit there that... Also, the past solutions are not going to work. We fall back on past solutions. We don't realize that they are outdated. They won't work. So mankind has to evolve and discover the new way. If it cannot discover the new way, it just slides back today or tomorrow. So we have to discover the new way. That's true. Very true.
You mentioned also about the relics for the center. It is very important. I was just thinking about that when we came online, that to ask you to help us with this. And maybe there are people who have relics for themselves. Why do they hold onto them as for their own possessions?
So that is something, since you are speaking about it, I have already told this, that... If, of course, and I'm saying this very openly because I don't believe they are anybody's property. So if they come through the normal process, okay. If they don't come, that I have taken as my responsibility to ensure that they will come. And that's for sure. So I've been saying this, and I feel for America and for the world, it's more or less getting more and more urgent that everything else can wait or develop, but for America, and which will have an impact on the world. For the last 4 years, 5 years, I've been feeling this, and I've been voicing this, that relics should come to La Grasse Center. The sooner, the better it is. Better for not only the center, but for America and for the world. I do feel that. And that won't be a problem once everything is ready. Relics will come. That's all I can say publicly. Yes. Yeah.
I would welcome there is H.P. Rama with us.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm sure he knows and yeah, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it will be ready by birthday of Sri Aurobindo, 2027.
Yes, so that's what I was actually thinking. 2028 is, one is 2027, birthday of Sri Aurobindo, and 2028 is of course the mother's 150th year. Any time in between would be wonderful. Yes.
Absolutely, absolutely. Very good. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. Very enlightening. It's very contradictory to see Mahatari's nature of force against compassion, love against the destruction, destructive power that he displayed to uplift us.
Yes, the Rudra energies. So I have held back so many stories which are coming. One of them was the destruction of the old world narrated in both Bhagavad Puran and Shiv Puran, when Daksha Prajapati is beheaded and many of the even godly beings, even rishis, the Virbhadra beheads. Who is that rishi? I'm forgetting his name. He is beheaded. And simply because now he is not keeping in accordance with the demands of the new age, new creation. So this is there, and Sri Aurobindo alludes to this, the parable of Mahadev and Sati, at great length in Bande Mataram. So
is there anyone else from our panel or else wants to say or to ask? Please.
You're muted, Jayashree.
I wanted to thank Palutta. It was such an inspiring talk. Thank you so much. I myself feel so elevated after listening to the love and compassion of Mahakali. And you brought it, you gave it so much life with your stories and Mother's explanations and how Mother is wanting us now to move forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I have some questions.
Yes.
But I think I will leave it to the panel. There are others who are waiting in line. And I shall ask my question.
Yes. And you can always write. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hello, G. I would like to just make a comment, but also thank you again. I know before we opened the session, you were saying that you had not had a chance to listen to some of the others and that you hoped that what you had to say would be new and unique. And I think everything that you said today was new and different, and it's such a wonderful way to be closing this series. I think my question is, as you speak about the importance of each of us individually to be sincere, to have faith, to seek after the truth, could you speak a little bit about the importance of Sangha, of community in these
Yes.
times? Because what we are seeing is more and more people reaching out and coming together, which is obviously intensifying, right, this effort and this movement forward. And it's obviously one of the main reasons that we and HP are looking forward to the new center being open, so that there can be a place where a larger community can come together to kind of push this whole movement or to sincerely receive this whole movement of Kali that's a forward-moving one. But could you speak a little bit about what the Mother in Sri Aurobindo has said about the importance of Sangha in these?
Yes, so in one of his earliest letters, Sri Aurobindo says that letter is to Barinda, and it's 1920, and he hints at the Sangha. He says, individually, of course, each one can achieve based on his strength or weaknesses, but collectively, we can do much more. Now, a very simple example is a finger and a fist. So, Sangha in this yoga especially is important. And it's important because it's about the collective evolution of the race. And for this very reason, the Sangha of Sri Aurobindo's yoga, now I'm just using the word Sangha, not society, ashram, group, because it's a beautiful word. Now, in this particular yoga, it will necessarily consist of very different varying individuals. Because this is not a uniform sect, and Mother speaks about it. I can only say that there is a long conversation of her in 1957. And if you Google search Gnostic individual and collectivity, then it'll come somewhere. I think 3rd February or later on. I mean later on, post the date. But so in 1957, after the supramental manifestations, he says there is an urgency for the ashram to move forward. And if it doesn't move forward, there'll be decline. She even says that it has gone beyond the boundaries of the ashram. All this she says. Then she says that the need for a collectivity is very pressing. And she speaks about the religious collectivities, which are not the ones she is referring to. Means it's not a community of, let's say, believers, or a community of, let's say, people who dress similarly. She speaks about that there have been religious communities always. Now, that's not the purpose. The purpose here is about collective evolution. So it will invariably be a collectivity where there will be people who are different. And she says the pressing need first will be, of course, Gnostic individual, and along with that, the different kinds of humanity which is represented as representative, and then they move together, which is very challenging. It is not like, you know, forming a community of just common seekers who are walking a common path. So the collectivity that Sri Aurobindo and the mother speak about is going to be different, because it will represent the earth. On earth you don't have uniformity and everybody with the same pattern. So when people are different in terms of thought, and humanity is moving toward that, even the idea of nation unit has changed into that there should be people who have got different thoughts and different patterns, and yet they are coming together. There is a national soul which they represent. So this itself is the first step towards a true collectivity, not like a religious community, not like a religion-based group life or a nation unit, which was the past. So this is where we see, particularly, let me say, the American and the Indian experiment, very interesting in this regard. But coming back to the Gnostic community, yes, it should be a collectivity where people come together. They may be different, they will be different, but the fundamental thing will be to help each other in this process of collective evolution. It's very challenging. And I believe that if I go by what Mother has said, and this is something very interesting, she says it need not be limited to a space. So it be like not limited necessarily to a space. It will be like spread out. So now with that time when she spoke, nobody could imagine that today when we are having a talk from La Grace, people from different parts of the world have joined. Like, I personally feel myself as much a part of La Grace that I'm as much there. So this is how this Gnostic communities will form. They will be not just necessarily only physical communities, but also they will be digital communities, to use a term. So because life is organized like that. So this is important, and of course there has to be people who are like cupbearers of the great change in physical space. And I have been sensing this since you mentioned this again and again, that La Grasse is one such place which the mother's vision and will is working upon it. And the way people will come, they are coming and they are organizing it. It's a very special work. So this collectivity will not be having standard format, that everybody must do the same thing. Like ashram, it's something very interesting. It's like there is nothing like, there is a collective meditation. People can join it, but there are a lot of people who don't join it. So they are good if people can join together and aspire together. It's always helpful. But still there would be some people who don't want to do it, or may not want to do it together in that particular spot. And yet they would connect in their own way. Nowadays we have this. We have the timing, and when we are having group meditations. And that is a new tendency which I see happening, which is very nice. People may be scattered in space, but in different time zones, and yet they come together to aspire. So the collectivities will be like that. So there won't be a standard format, but basically the central point will be the idea of the spiritual evolution, evolution towards a new creation. That faith should be there. That's what she has said, that faith in the spiritual evolution of mankind. Collectivity should not contain fifth columnist of the wars who are always whispering doubt and fear, because then it becomes very difficult. Yeah.
Thank you. And I guess, Vladimir, maybe we have time for just a couple of questions.
Right. There are several questions here and, of course, comments. Thank you so much for the very inspiring thoughts and presentation. What is the death to Rudra? Please clarify.
So if we really look at this, of course, is the passage from Essays on the Gita, those who want to refer back. So if we really look at the forces that came into birth at the moment of creation. So if you really look at the Big Bang. So what is the Big Bang? Tremendous forces released which are tearing the stars apart. That's how we have a star-studded creation. Mother speaks of this in volume 2 very beautifully. Then if you look at how life came into existence, the cosmic, the primordial soup, it is the forces that are operating at that point of time are literally, I mean, one of the example, let me give one example which is so beautiful. Now we look at the moon and we say, oh, moon is beautiful, it's inspiring poetry and all those things. How did the moon come into existence? An asteroid literally struck the earth and out of the earth sprang moon, which became a satellite of earth. And now today it's an object of beauty. But who is throwing the, I mean, Rudra forces are the one which are throwing literally the forces that are pushing these planetary systems, and they come into play. And slowly, once the basic work is done, I mean, the way the oceans formed. So there have been tremendous forces at play, and these are the Rudra forces. And whenever there is a time of all upheaval towards something new, the Rudra forces are at play. One example I'll give again from the Indian subcontinent. So what happened in India, if you look at the story of Kashmir, so Kashmir was the custodian of the wealth of knowledge of India. So all these Vedic tantric traditions, so Pandits were the ones who were the custodians. But they kept the knowledge but lacked the force. Look here, the Rudra forces come all the way from the Middle East on a rampage, literally, challenge. And Shivinda speaks of it, that how Christ manifested love and Muhammad manifested force. But neither of them has the complete secret. But what did they do in the bargain? They awakened once again a nation which had gone on to sleep with its knowledge and with its nice feelings of love, and post-Ghazni and all this, you know, the Mughal Empire, we see that slowly the nation waking up with Shivaji, with Guru Gobind Singh, with Maharana Pratap, and of course subsequently Sri Aurobindo. So they come to wake us up from our sleep, because great changes have to happen. So these are the forces of Rudra, and they are very powerfully destructive. Hanuman himself is one of the Rudras. He is regarded as 11th Rudra. We know what he started. He went to Lanka and literally gave them the message, you are going to be finished, by destroying the Ashok Vatika and by burning Lanka. So these are the first messages which come in a nation unit, in a collective unit. The Rudra forces come first, and they give us the message that look here, things are not fine. Take care, otherwise you are going in for something far more destructive, devastating. So the Rudra forces are the forces of destruction that act, and governing them is of course Mahadev, the great destroyer, and of course Kali, who sits by his side, because Kali and Gauri are two sides of the same power. So these are the Rudras. So the debt is because they have gone into creation. Violent forces have gone. So they are there in every human being. By debt is meant is that without their action, the world would not have been formed. So they are operating within us. The forces even of death and destruction, which are operating within us, they have a role to play. Now you can transform them, but if you just hold them inside, sit over them, they will find their own release when the time comes, and they will take us by surprise. So they are still operating in creation, and they have their role to destroy the old. So we have a choice. Either we pay the debt by accepting the need for change. So how we pay the debt? By accepting the need for change and consciously changing. Because they come for change. If we don't change, like Daksh didn't change. He says, no, I don't want, I will abuse Mahadev, I don't want my daughter. Then these Rudra forces will compel you to change. So that's what we read. The choice is imperative, truth or the abyss. And for the change in today's times, they demand truth and they demand love, but true love. So if they are there, then there is no problem. Otherwise, they are there waiting. They are super active when there is change.
It reminds me also that this force of supramental which is coming.
Yes.
Actually pressing even more so.
Yes.
The response is even more so from the darker.
Yes, the pressure for change and the resistance of the darkness. But as an individual, we should be careful that which side of the journey we stand. Are we standing for the old world that is being destroyed, or are we ready to swim up current and take the leap toward the future? That's what she said. Use the word leap toward the future.
There are a few more questions here. Thank you, Alok, for a beautiful talk. Could you kindly give us the reference from where you read the last passage about the war where money will...
Oh, so there are two places where I read. One is from Messages of the Mother, volume 14, where she 15, where she describes, explains the messages a little more. Later on, I'll send it exactly. I'll send it to you and you can share it with the group. And the second, there is a whole, I would rather recommend that people read The Unseen Power, which was a postscript chapter written by Sri Aurobindo in 1949 after the passing of the war. So it's there in Human Cycle. So they are very, very powerful statement. You can see as force in everything. And of course, The Great Secret was the play which I read in the beginning portions, which was from volume 12. So mainly volume 15, you'll find the messages and their explanations. And very clearly, Sri Aurobindo has, the mother has mentioned. She speaks about money, she speaks about greed. So.
Yes, and Sri Aurobindo speaks about this in The Human Cycle. And there.
Yes, in The Human Cycle, he is described at great length.
Right, right. That money can suffocate the war.
Yes, yes. He uses the word economic barbarism and all that is there.
Any examples from Purana about Kali destroying gods?
Kali destroying the gods, he has swallowed Shiva. Destroying the gods comes later. In the Shiva Purana, there is a description of Kali in her tremendous, this is, you know, she adopts a form which is called Vidwa, the widow. So when Shiva takes, you know, he is, they confront each other. So, because she is safeguarding a devotee. I'm not going into the details of this very amazing story. But when Shiva, she has given assurance to this being who has surrendered to her out of love. And then Shiva comes and says, don't protect him. And she says, once protected, always protected. And then Shiva stands against her, she swallows Shiva. And she becomes a widow. It's a very amazing story. And it's a very fascinating story. Then Narayan comes and she says, I am not going to listen to anyone because Kali is the highest force. That's why Sri Aurobindo says, let me not be subject to these gods, O Kali. She is the supreme liberating force. Even in the Tantras. Though there is a very interesting place where Kali has been defeated. Almost. And that comes where very paradoxically it's because a lover of Krishna, he has, you know, Sudama or Sridhama, he is in his next life. But the interesting part is that how he got the power to defeat for a moment. She rather controls herself because Krishna and Kali are two sides of one reality. There is a poem of Sri Aurobindo on Krishna and Kali, the cosmic dance, worth reading. We only know about Radha. Radha comes later. She is waiting. We are not ready. It's Krishna and Kali which dance first. So that story. So there are plenty of stories where she has destroyed the gods almost if they stand against someone whom Kali has defended. And always they are shown as running in all the directions, quarters when Kali manifests. They dare not come nearby. All everywhere. You see this manifested even in Narsingavatar. When Vishnu assumes the form of Narsingavatar, all the gods start running away. So again we see the childlike. That's why the mother speaks about the psychic being. Everywhere I see, it's only the psychic being or the childlike state which can appease Kali. So when Narsingavatar in that fierce form, all the gods start running away because that fire starts licking the regions and the gods with it. So Prahlad is unfazed. So he goes and sits in his lap. When he sits in his lap, he changes and he starts cajoling him and it changes the whole thing. So psychic being is the safety in all these stories, basically, or Shiva's Batuk Avatar. It's like it's that childlike state in which the psychic being is always where there is no fear. So then you are safe. Otherwise, gods, rishis, sages, nothing.
I thought that the same about the childhood. You look at all the cubs, small children, kittens, dogs, puppies. They behave so innocent.
Yes.
Different. They are actually what we should be. All.
Yeah.
But we are growing slow.
No. We are what is described as the fall from paradise. With the coming of the mind, we relive the story of Adam and Eve. We lose the innocence. We fall from paradise as the mind develops. So we are reliving the story. Mother has spoken about it. But then later on, when we do the conscious surrender, then it's a different thing. We have to go through this phase.
There is few more questions, but one of them is really interesting. What are the qualities of a warrior who is an instrument of Mahakali and working for the manifestation of a new world?
Absolutely. Sincere. Straightforward. No duplicity. And most importantly, absolutely selfless and fearless. In the ashram context, it was Pranabdha. People liked him or didn't like him. Once I casually mentioned to him when he was in the ashram, I said, he was admitted in nursing home, and I said, well, whenever I see you, I feel it is the divine love which is very strongly working in you. And later on, he didn't tell anything to me. He was not in that state, but both the ladies who were looking after, they came and told me that, how did you make out that? I said, this was so evident. So it was like that for him. And that's why he was very misunderstood. Because when he took that aspect, nobody would dare say anything. Mother always listened to whatever he said. So people again found it very difficult that why is she doing that. So from our point of view, straightforwardness, sincerity and fearlessness. Of course, courage comes with that. So absolute fearlessness. Kali and fear don't go together. It completely contradicts her working. Any kind of fear. Kali is not afraid even of, you know, virtue and sin. She goes to that extent. Kali's favorite in the Mahabharata war was Bhimsen. And as the story goes, that at the end when Gandhari asks him that you could have left one son at least, he killed the 100. Bhim says, I love and respect your mother, but to tell you frankly, if you had 200 sons, I would have killed all of them. That's Bhimsen. Absolutely straightforward, frank, without any fear. He would tell his brother, he would tell. So that's the kind of consciousness that Kali likes and acts best with them.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. This is really important for the closure of this series to understand the course of Kali and as the mother of love who is speeding up the divine manifestation and is merciless to all the
yes.
Ob- obstacles on the way, trying to survive in the name of some compassion or help.
Yes, yes.
Thank you, Alokji. And for our participants, stay tuned because Alokji will be back as we do our series on Mahalakshmi.
Yes.
So we thank you.
Thank you. Jai Ma. Jai Ma.